I know that last week I shared on Monday the stats of supporters, partners for Wake Up Call and just how much money I was making. I gave you the embarrassing fact that I was making, if things hadn't changed, that I'd be making what, a grand total of 57 cents per episode, and ask you, would you do the same for it? It was by no means a way to be like, feel sorry or guilt me into supporting the show. It was to give you an idea of, because I can be transparent, I don't have to put up a false wall of success because I am successful in other areas of podcasting, but to give you an idea of what makers of this content are making. Unfortunately, this episode is pre-recorded due to family being in from out of town, so I don't have those stats to share with you. I can only share with you that I hope that the number is now more than 57 cents an episode, but if not, I'll still be here and I'll still be doing it because this is really what I believe a lot of podcasters are drawn to, the experience to go back and look at all these crucial moments from 1996. Did I say 96? 86 to 2000. This 14 years, very crucial moment in my life where I would go from being 12 to 26 has been rewarding enough. So the 57 cents an episode is you paying me to go to therapy. I'll report back with real numbers next Monday, or maybe at the end of this week, depending on how it goes. But remember, you can always support the show over at anchor.fm/wakeupcall. Let's get started with today's episode. This week, I wanted to talk about five episodes centered around five bands and how they play a really important part into this moment of my coming of age. And really, the coming of age is learning about how to act your age, or how to act your age when you get older through these informative years. These aren't the best albums. They're just crucial things that I remember standing out to me. Today, we're going to go to 1991, which at this moment, I've already been to a punk and hardcore show. But this is a mainstream album that really spoke to the time. And it was the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magik. Now, before this record came out in 91, they had been in the world of skateboarding. They showed up in several different movies about the culture. They had used skateboarders in the backgrounds of their videos. They were definitely a band that was kind of from that world, but had made it mainstream. They were definitely a big band in the alternative music scene and were there way before most. I mean, since high school, these guys here in LA have been playing music together, lost a couple of guys along the way, but really their career came together in September of 91 when they released Blood Sugar Sex Magik. Now, the reason why this album is so important on the journey and why I've kind of skipped ahead to this one is this is alternative music starting to go mainstream, which has a danger to it, because when you love something and then it starts to become on the radio and you see other people loving it, it kind of makes you question your own love for it. And even though this album would have singles that would just be played one too many times, it still holds up as a really great album, especially if you look at the context and when it was created. But to me, the most important thing about this album isn't the amazing song Under the Bridge or Breaking the Girl. I can still hear the part in the song where they're banging on pipes with a hammer. But to me, it was the layout. The layout had an early version of what looks like Instagram. The guys recorded this album, I believe, with Rick Rubin, locked in a house. And they took photos of all their tattoos. And they seemed heavily, heavily tattooed at the time. By today's standards, not so much. But this layout of all of their different tattoos, it had a way of just hitting you over the head of, well, I want to do that. I need that. And not in a, this is going to make my parents so mad. I've never been that type of person. I've never wanted to just make somebody mad. I've always wanted to make me happy. And sometimes the consequences of making yourself happy is you make others mad. But the idea of the tattoo that you could take this thing that was originally for outlaws and sailors, and you could mark yourself and mark with somebody just seeing you walking down the street that you belonged to a tribe. Now, not tribal tattoos, even though unfortunately I do have a couple because I am a man of my time, but the idea that you're a part of this thing, that it's the ultimate t-shirt, it's the ultimate bumper sticker. It says, I'm a part of a certain culture. I'm a part of a certain way of thinking. At least that's what it meant back then. As this album came out and you looked at all of their photos of their tattoos, it was true influence. You only wanted more. You only wanted your first. You only wanted to show the world that you were different. And so not too long after this came out, I believe a sophomore in high school, which would have been in this time period, me and my friend, we traded Taco Bell and I think $25 each to a guy in a shady apartment in downtown Louisville and got our first tattoos. My first tattoo is horrible, like it should be. If you go and get a glamorous first tattoo and it's amazing and you put sunscreen on it, you're not really living. You're not really a part of it. You're part of the new movement of tattoos as BMWs and a sign of wealth and status. But back then they were a sign of being different and off the radar. And this tattoo on my ankle, I had to hide it from my folks because I still lived at home. But the thing about it that always brings me back to this moment is that it's this weird, not symmetric, but it's supposed to be a symmetric badge that's kind of tribal. It's green, and it's something that would have fit into this layout. This tattoo would go in with all those other shitty tattoos that the guys in the band made a part of their layout. And I say it's an early version of Instagram because they had limited space on their layout for their album that they knew was going to be a hit, but they chose to use it with the space of telling their story. Not sad or somber or tough guy band pics, but literally, these are our tattoos. These are our scars. This is the story that we want the world to know about us. I found that level of personality to be completely intriguing. It made me feel like I knew these guys, like I liked them, like I was rooting for them, like I wanted to be one of them. So I know it's not the coolest of albums, and I know they're not the coolest of bands, but in the context, this was a big moment of changing the way that you could see a band or relate to a band. And it was the birth of something that soon all of us couldn't get enough of. A big wake-up call for me on looking back on this time in my life is really understanding the power of influence, how I was influenced, and how maybe I'm influencing others when I reverse engineer the math. Tomorrow's episode, because Tuesdays are always when you try to release your best material, we'll look at the band, the first punk band that I ever remember actually seeing the cassette, holding in my hand. We'll go back in the timeline to the 80s, when I first saw a Minor Threat cassette, and I was too afraid to listen to it because of a song called Guilty of Being White.